My name is Brandon Graves. I go to BYU Law School, and this story is called Detention in Deep Water. The boat skipped over the small waves on the lake. It was early evening, the sun not quite begun its final descent toward the horizon, and the faintly fragrant smell of desert and the sound of crickets beginning their songs filled the air. I sat at the front of the boat, the bow lifted up high over the water, dipping and rising again in a slow, constant cycle as we made our way toward a far shore. Once we were close, Aaron, the leader of my youth group, idled the boat, and my friends Matt, Emma, and I leaped into the water. We swam the short distance and began to meander around the beach, wandering behind a small hill that obscured our view of the lake. Moments later, we heard the faint sound of a boy's voice. At first, I wondered if I had imagined it, but it came again more clearly. Justin was calling out to us from the water beyond the hill. Justin was about 2 years younger than me, and though I was friendly to him, I found him mildly annoying. Confident that he would follow the sound of our voices and appear around the hill at any moment, we didn't reply and simply continued talking. After a minute or two, we thought it odd that he hadn't shown up. We returned to the water's edge, calling out to him and scanning for any signs of him or the boat. Even though we couldn't find him, we didn't give it much thought, assuming he had turned back to the boat. When Aaron came back 20 minutes later, he immediately asked where Justin was. Confused, we explained that we'd heard Justin call out and had looked for him, but assumed he had returned to the boat. Panic spread across Aaron's face. Justin never got back on the boat. We frantically made plans. Matt, Emma, and I returned to the shore while Aaron contacted search and rescue. An uneasy feeling filled my stomach, but I still couldn't conceive that something terrible might have happened. Justin was an active member of the high school swim team and had even placed in a recent meet. At the worst, I figured he must have twisted an ankle or stumbled off a small cliff while looking for us. We scoured the uneven shore, at every turn expecting to find Justin. Dusk had already fallen, and night rapidly approached. Aaron soon rounded us up, sped across the lake, and maneuvered into the dock. We stood in silence under the heavy stars, shaken, but still convinced that we'd wake the next morning to the news that Justin had been found, perhaps injured, but okay. News didn't come for 2 days. Finally, I received a call saying that Justin's body had been found at the bottom of the reservoir. After muttering a small thanks, I walked out the back door of my house, folded myself slowly into an armchair, and wept. My mind churned what I could have done differently to prevent Justin's death. I rehearsed countless iterations of alternate realities in which I answered his call, went to the water sooner, stayed at the beach longer. While I had no reason to think that Justin would drown, I couldn't escape the realization that he had called out, I had ignored him, and perhaps if I had simply answered him, he would still be alive. Alone on my back porch, I made myself a promise. I would never again ignore a cry for help. 7 years later, and 2,000 miles away, I met Samir Fayed, an Iraqi asylum seeker detained in a prison in Virginia. Samir called the ABA Commission on Immigration multiple times a week, each time fervently protesting his unjust incarceration until the prison's 30-minute time restraint cut him off, after which he would immediately call back and resume where he left off. It was often impossible to get in a single word. Sometimes Samir shared disturbing experiences. One day, he returned to his cell to find his winter clothing shredded. A short time later, after asking for shampoo, a group of prison officers assaulted him, pepper spraying him in the face, beating him and breaking ribs, and placing a mask over his face until he threw up. He was denied medical treatment for weeks following the attack. Similar incidences continued, and his nervousness and volatility increased, even toward us. Samir was trapped in a horrendous cycle of abuse and injustice, and his resilience eventually deteriorated to the point where he accused a member of my team of allying with his prison guards and ICE to have him deported, not caring if he were killed upon return to Iraq. Despite the mounting difficulty of working with him, I was determined to ensure that his cry for help did not go unheeded. I realized that if I didn't listen, perhaps no one would. After a while, Samir began asking for me when he called. Even if we could do nothing to help him legally, he needed validation. Someone beyond the confines of the hard prison walls, to hear and believe him, to comprehend what he was going through, and to offer a hand where possible. I could at least give him that. Only after finishing my internship at the ABA did I fully understand the toxic effect incarceration had had on Samir's personality. My former supervisor posted a video of the newly liberated Samir sitting with him in his office in Washington, D.C. A beaming smile filled his face as he praised God and thanked me and the other interns who had offered him a listening ear, support, and above all, patience through some of his hardest months. The transformation I witnessed in Samir was nothing short of miraculous to me. Where intense anger, suffering, and defeat had prevailed, gratitude, peace, and healing were restored. Samir was given the chance to tell his story, and quite possibly to save his life, simply because people on the shore had been willing to listen and to act. One of the biggest realizations I've had throughout these years is that while fear, intolerance, and condemnation are obvious enemies of harmony and prosperity, mere self-preoccupation can be equally as dangerous. I think that most people, like me with Justin, have no feelings of ill will, but are often too caught up in the sounding chambers of our own daily interests that we fail to see that we're at the water's edge and there are people calling out. Sometimes it's obvious that someone is drowning and needs aid. Other times, however, we might wonder why they're in the water in the first place, or why they can't seem to make it to shore. But until we go to the water's edge, it's impossible to know.